Hi, welcome to Facebook Live. I'm Sean McCord. These are the Pauls. I'll introduce them in a moment. We are in the Community Idea Station's Media Center in the downtown mall here at the Virginia Film Festival with a Facebook Live interview. These interviews will also be podcast on the Seville Podcasting Network on sevillepodcast.org and available on the Virginia Film Festival on virginiafilmfestival.com/podcast. Those are my introductions I'm going to have to do every time. This is documentary filmmaker, award-winning documentary filmmaker, Paul Wagner, and Paul Karam, one of the subjects of your newest film, Black in Blue. I'm going to say this several times. Pick up your programs all over Charlottesville. Screens tonight at 6 o'clock in Vinegar Hill Theater. Paul Wagner, tell us, what is Black and Blue?
All right. So Black and Blue is a feature-length documentary about the first black athletes to break the color line in the Southeastern Conference. This happened in the 60s. And the way the film came about is that about 5 years ago, I heard from this guy, Paul Karam, who had been a teammate of these players at the time. I know it looks like we're only, you know, in our 50s, maybe 40s, but actually Paul and I were at the University of Kentucky about 50 years ago. And Paul is a quarterback who played with these two of the four athletes. Mm-hmm. And really, I'll let him talk about his feelings at the time, but the story had not been told. And Paul undertook the mission of getting that story told, and in two different ways, statues and a documentary film. We're here showing the documentary film, and Paul can tell you more about the statues.
Black and Blue screens tonight, Friday, 6 o'clock at Vinegar Hill. Let's put some historical context in this, because this is a story that people may not remember, especially now. When you look at the NCAA, when you look at college football, there is no color line, but there clearly was in this. The story, I think, starts in 1966.
Right.
1966, and at the University of Kentucky, UK, and there were no black football players in college football in the Southeastern Conference.
Right.
For those maybe who have forgotten our history or haven't read enough of our history, you were there. Why was this such a big deal?
Well, first of all, Sean, it started in 1965.
Okay.
And it's a big deal because the state of Kentucky has been portrayed outside of our borders, I think unfairly, in terms of being a part of this historic breakthrough. For instance, the movie Glory Road, about an all-white Kentucky basketball team that loses to an all-black Texas Western team. Two of these men actually signed their scholarship letters of intent before that game was played. So what we have here in the 60s is the first African-American to be recruited, Greg Page, by a Southeastern Conference school for any sport, the first to play, the first African-American captain of a Southeastern Conference team, elected by 100 white teammates, and the first to go through all 4 years of competition. So in light of the mid-60s, with what was going on in the South, it's a remarkable accomplishment, and I think any way that you look at it, just as much of an accomplishment in integration in the South as politicians, teachers, buses, or social engineering could claim.
Right, so we're used to, you know, now looking at footage of that time and the struggles of that time, and we're seeing, you know, integrating lunch counters and buses, and these are small actions that lead to significant consequences. But the world of sports is something that people have traditionally come together for. So to see black athletes on a football field when there have been none before, I think you're right. That's a significant historical moment. Now, you say that these players were recruited. So the coach, and who was the coach?
Charlie Bradshaw. Actually, the coach who actively recruited the first African-American, Greg Page, from Middlesboro, Kentucky, up in the mountains, was Homer Rice, who became the head coach at North Carolina, the athletic director at Georgia Tech, the head coach of Rice University, interesting name there, and the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals.
Okay.
But he was the assistant coach at Kentucky who sort of discovered Greg Page up in the mountains.
And obviously, he can't be here to speak for himself, mm-hmm. but as you began to unravel this story, Paul, mm-hmm. What did you find out about the coach and his actions and his frame of mind
right.
when he elected to recruit
yeah.
the first black
Let's talk
player.
About not Charlie Brasho, who was the head coach, but Homer Rice. There's kind of an interesting story. He, as a young man, had tried out with the Dodgers in 1946. Okay, do you know who else was trying out with the Dodgers in spring training
Same
of 1946?
You'll have to tell me.
Jackie Robinson.
Sure, heard of him.
Yeah, you may have heard of him. So Homer Rice was a friend of Jackie Robinson's because they had tried out for the Dodgers. Jackie, by the way, made the team, as we well know. Homer did not, but he went on later then, a couple of decades later, he was an assistant coach at Kentucky. So when he met Greg Page and realized what an athlete he was, you know, saw him as a junior in high school, he said to Greg, "You can be the Jackie Robinson of the Southeastern Conference." So one of the things that's really interesting, I think, in the story that Paul saw and we've tried to represent on film is the fact that these first two guys, Greg Page, who was from this mountain town, Middlesboro, Kentucky, and Nate Northington, who was from Louisville, where I'd grown up, they were very conscious of the fact that they were going to be civil rights pioneers, literally being told, you are going to be the Jackie Robinson of the Southeastern Conference. And in Nate's case, he was recruited by the governor of Kentucky. So, yeah, his family was invited when he was headed towards to go to Purdue, and his family was invited by the governor of Kentucky to have Sunday dinner in the governor's mansion near a couple of weeks before Christmas, and the governor literally convinced him to, without his parents in the room, by the way, took the letter of intent out of his coat pocket and said, "Son, I think, you know, I want to see you be the person who breaks the color line in the Southeastern Conference." So those first two guys, in addition to being terrific football players, were pretty conscious, when you say, Paul, of that they were going to be, they were civil rights pioneers in that sense. It's sort of a different story in that Paul can really address the next two guys who didn't even know that UK was segregated. Yeah,
really.
Just wanted to play football, and Houston and Wilbur Hackett was elected by 100 white teammates as captain his junior and senior years. And to give you a perspective of what it was like, Sean, because football stadiums in the South today are probably the most integrated cities in the United States.
That's right.
But in 1968, we played Ole Miss in Jackson, Mississippi. Think about Mississippi in 1968. We have two African Americans on the team. An African American has never set foot on that field, and there are 60,000 people in a night game, and none of them are black. There's not a black face in the stadium. And in the third quarter, Wilbur Hackett knocks the flower of Mississippi, Archie Manning, out of the game for a couple of plays. So it's a fascinating story, and that was a dark, dark, dark event.
And people should come see the film, which is Black and Blue, screening tonight at 6:00 at Vinegar Hill. But how did the crowds respond during that game?
Horribly. The field was lined with state troopers.
Really?
That Mississippi state troopers that berated our black teammates the entire game.
They were supposed, the troopers were supposedly there to protect these guys, and they were the worst.
This is Mississippi in 1968. Yeah. This is how much courage these guys had. And what's remarkable about them is in the last 50 years, nothing has really been done to recognize what they did, and they never made a peep about it, because they had these men had the equal amounts of the courage to do what they did and the humility not to really care about a lot of recognition. It's a really remarkable story.
Now, we should mention that three of the surviving football players are in your film.
That's right.
They're interviewed
in the film, right.
And how many are here for the festival?
Wilbur Hackett. One has come up from Kentucky, and he'll be at the Vinegar Hill at 6 this afternoon.
At 6 this evening for Black and Blue at 6 o'clock. So then when you joined the team, you became quarterback of the team, Paul, during the second year after the team had already been integrated.
Right.
And did you know these guys before?
I played against Hackett in high school.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And we're both from Louisville. And of course, here's the thing, Sean, that is hard to explain. When you play football, all of that stuff goes away. Height, weight, color, freckles, everything's gone. Football is the cleaning ground for all of that. You know everything there is to know about your teammates. You know who just fell in love, who flunked the calculus course, who's a coward, who's brave. Mm. And football takes a lot of, because of the nature of the commitment you make physically and every other way. And well, those guys are, you know, just brothers to us. And our 100 white teammates would lay in front of a railroad car for those men.
And have you stayed in touch these past 50 years?
Yes. Hackett and I have been friends forever. We've done business together. Houston is a remarkable man. Of course, Greg died, and it tells the story of how he died in the film.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And Nate has been the one who's sort of, how do you want to explain that, Paul? He just sort of disappeared for about 47 years, and I convinced him that he had to resurface. And we have a reunion of our old has-beens and never-wases. And I finally convinced him to come back to a reunion, and that's when all this came out.
Paul really brought Nate back into the fold, but maybe it's worth explaining just briefly how that happened and what happened. As they were sophomores, Nate and Greg were practicing, getting ready for the season, and there was an accident on the field during practice, and Greg was hit and was paralyzed and was in the hospital paralyzed. The date came up for the first game in the SEC when these two guys were supposed to break the color line. It was against Ole Miss in Lexington, Kentucky. And Greg's still hurt, so Nate goes out to play the game that Saturday. And that morning, this should be the greatest day of his life, right? He's the first black man to play in the South. It's a major moment in civil rights history. It should have been the greatest day of his life. It was the worst day, because that morning he learned that Greg had died the night before. So you have this bizarre, tragic collision of this monumental, historic breakthrough and the death of his best friend, roommate, and fellow civil rights pioneer. In the wake of that, Nate was terribly hurt and despondent. And it's not like today where there would have been an army of therapists, you know, there to support him and all the other players. They just went on with the season. It was noted, you know, but it wasn't a big deal in the way that now we realize how big it was, both Nate's breakthrough and the tragedy to Greg. So in the wake of it, Nate was despondent, and before the season was half over, he had left the team. So you had this weird situation where these two guys who had been specifically identified as civil rights pioneers, the Jackie Robinsons of the Southeastern Conference, suddenly they're gone. And the mantle of that responsibility of having to go into the South and play in Alabama and Mississippi now falls to the two guys that were friends of Paul's, Wilbur and Houston, who came to Kentucky. They didn't even know it was segregated.
Wow.
They were there to play. They literally did not realize that it was an all-white team and that they would be playing all-white.
Where were they coming from?
Wilbur was, played in Louisville for Manual High School. Mm-hmm. And, but, you know, he didn't think about that stuff.
Right.
And Houston was from a small town in western Kentucky and was totally
Until he was a senior in high school, which is even more remarkable. Houston was from Hazard.
That's right. He was from the mountains. Yeah. And just his fourth last year.
The story, Sean, goes on and on and on. For example, Greg Page is from Middlesboro, Kentucky, up in the eastern Kentucky mountains. His mother is the only registered black nurse in the mountains, and his father in the 50s and 60s is a black coal miner. no such thing.
Right, right.
I mean, it's just a remarkable, remarkable story.
And we have to remember in this age of sort of constant media, such as Facebook Live, back then, you got news from the newspaper and the radio, and depending on where you were in Kentucky, if you were lucky, maybe on the black and white TV. So it's very, very easy to grow kind of isolated.
We actually got color TVs in Kentucky around 2005.
Excellent. So tell me a little bit more, Paul Wagner, filmmaker, how this story came to your attention.
Right. So Paul, this Paul Karam is a very stubborn guy, and this the fact that there was this amazing story, I don't know, there was this amazing story that no one knew about, was kind of a burr on his rear end, I think, and he was determined to get the story out, in part because he was a close friend of Wilbur's and of Houston's, but also because, he just felt it was an important story in terms of civil rights history and race relations and the story of how these teams were in, the sports integrated and the importance of sports in the story of integration, which even now you could say, actually, that part of the story of race relations in the country is not that well understood or known or celebrated as it probably should be.
The role of sports
in integration. The 60s.
Interesting that in the past year, they put the statues of these guys up outside the stadium, remarkable bronze sculptures. And throughout the same period of time, Confederate general after Confederate general statues in Kentucky came down.
Right. I want to get to the statues in a minute.
Yeah. So Paul really started agitating and started a petition signed by all the players of that era to recognize these four guys, perhaps with a statue, and that's eventually what happened. But as that developed, and there was a commitment on the part of the University of Kentucky to create the statues, then Paul started thinking, maybe we should have a film to kind of fill in the backstory, would you say?
I went on the internet, Sean, and Googled how to write a storyboard for a film.
and Paul Wagner's
name. I still have the original document.
And I'm going to guess that the petition was probably a petition attached to a clipboard with real signatures on it.
Well, yes, but here's how the petition happened. One day I'm minding my own business, watching ESPN on television, and this movie comes on, entitled 30 for 30, The Color Orange. And it's about the University of Tennessee. And it's about Conridge Holloway, who is an African-American quarterback, the first quarterback, African-American quarterback in the Southeastern Conference. And I'm watching this 30 or 45-minute long program, and I'm thinking, isn't this great? Because they can't do this story without mentioning the University of Kentucky and our guys. And sure, but I want to make myself very clear here. Conridge Holloway deserves all the credit in the world. But my point is this. When that was over with, I thought, oh, my God, what if the Hacketts or the Pages or the Northingtons watch this? We have to do something about this. And that's when we got the petition in front of my teammates and got the statues.
For the statues.
Right, yeah. Right.
Then the statues are up. I'm feeling pretty good about things. And every time I turn on the TV or go to the movies, what do I see? The Help, the Butler. And it hit me, this is a better story. This is a better story than all of them. And then I run into an Academy Award-winning filmmaker. I don't know how in the hell that happened.
This guy here. So have you two known each other since?
We hadn't. We should have known each other, except that we went to rival high schools.
After the film premieres, we will no longer know
each other. Right. We're breaking off our relationship. But Paul and I both grew up same era, Catholic boy school kids, but the competing boy schools. And so we didn't know each other. But we had a mutual friend. And a guy in Louisville that we knew well, both knew well, put us together. And, it's been a pleasure. It's been great for me to, I'm based here in Charlottesville. This has been great for me to reestablish my, connections back home in Louisville and at the University of Kentucky. And to tell a story, what's been interesting for me, one of the most interesting things about the experience is how our perceptions of it have changed in 50 years. it's funny, when you, if you look at the press coverage at the time, it was noted that, yes, Nate was the first, you know, black athlete. But down in the bottom of the article, you know, it didn't occur to anybody that it was a big deal. Now, of course, you've got, you know, a majority of athletes, certainly on the football teams in the Southeastern Conference, are African American. So, in fact, we had an experience a few weeks ago. We in a private screening, we showed the film for the University of Kentucky football team. And that was pretty interesting.
That was really neat.
Yeah. To sit there with this, you know, big room of these elite athletes, most of them African American, and I'm thinking, those guys must be scratching their heads. How could there be a Southern, you know, Southeastern Conference football team and no black guys on it, you know, just, and it is, it's sort of mind-blowing when you think about it. The other interesting thing that we haven't even talked that much about, but it's sort of suggested in the film, is as bad as it was for our buddies to go and play at Ole Miss and Alabama and LSU, and we couldn't even put all the stories that they had about, you know, how they refused at restaurants and hotels, and mm-hmm. police dogs that threatened them and state cops that tormented them. There's a million stories, we couldn't even fit them all in the film. But what's amazing was, once it happened like that, all those schools that wouldn't even let an African-American attend school let them into school and started playing them on their sports teams. I mean, it's remarkable. And that goes to me, the power of sports.
Right.
You know, and I think that's the part, that's the thing I think is most important in some ways about the film.
And Sean, for all the barbs that have been thrown at Kentucky for the movie Glory Road, when Nate Northington stepped on the field against Ole Miss in 1967, the same day his roommate died.
Yeah.
He was the only African-American varsity athlete in any sport in the Southeastern Conference.
Right. So, and there's a saying, you know, we always hear the quote from Martin Luther King and other people, the most segregated part of the week is Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely true. The most integrated part of the week is Saturday afternoon. I mean, it just is.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, then, Paul, you were instrumental and getting recognition for these players now, and getting the statues up. And by the way, see nice footage of the statues if you watch the trailer for Black in Blue. I'll make sure I'm pronouncing that, which screens tonight at 6 o'clock at Vinegar Hill. But if you go to the Virginia Film Festival website, you can actually see the trailer for the film and see some footage of the statues.
Great, yeah.
So tell us about the development of the statues. When you showed up with this petition with how many signatures on it initially?
57 former players for Charlie Bradshaw, our right. coach, who was written up in Sports Illustrated mm-hmm. and similar media venues as being a taskmaster to the point of cruel. His first team had 98 players, and when they played the first game, he had 28. Ran off 70 players. I mean, nowadays it couldn't happen for 30 minutes the way we practiced. But the real catalyst for the whole thing was seeing that 30-30, the color orange, and thinking, how can we have an accomplishment like this and not have it be the biggest
recognized
PR piece for this whole university? And they've embraced it, and it's changed, and the statues, and there was, you know, a little bit of a tug of war going on. And at the end of the day, there's just, I mean, reasonable people, there's no way in the world they couldn't embrace this.
Mm. So you were there, Paul, for the unveiling
yep.
of the statues.
Mm-hmm. And filmed it.
Tell us about
yeah.
that day.
Yeah, well, it was pretty exciting. Obviously, the three players, their families, a ton of, you know, Paul's associates from that era, players from that era. The current UK football team was there. A little youth. The most touching part was there was a youth football team there, all African American.
I can't watch the movie when this little African American girl
looks up. So it was a great event, and the university did do itself proud. The statues are beautiful, so there's a moment when the current players pull the tarp off and reveal the statues. That's sort of the climax of the film. I'm giving away the closing of the film here, but that's...
You see the film anyway.
Yeah, but that's what it builds to. And, a great moment, and, one that just was a long time in coming.
Moments of comedy that are so intense you can't believe happen in these situations.
Yeah.
When Wilbur Hackett knocked Archie Manning out of the Ole Miss game in an all-white 60,000 Knight Stadium in Jackson Memorial, he comes back to the huddle, and one of our teammates, Kerry Shahead, another linebacker. So you've got 10 guys here, and Hackett in front of them calling the defensive signal. Kerry said, "Hackett, these people have been drinking. It's nighttime. Can you move a little farther from the huddle?"
Wow.
In case they miss, and just broke up the whole team.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the interesting things to me about the role of these guys, as now we can say, oh, there were civil rights leaders. That's not how they thought of themselves.
They were football players.
Sure. And so they didn't do things like, they hadn't read Gandhi about, how you, if when you're attacked by a racist, you're supposed to be passive. No. They got in a fist fight with them and usually, always beat them up.
Football players.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's part of what's interesting about it. It's sort of like a whole different take on, civil rights era. I mean, this is right in the middle of the 60s when everything's, we all know that history, what's going on. But this is on a, kind of a separate parallel track that had, in retrospect, we realized how important it was and
sure.
how powerful a movement it was.
So Wilbur Hackett is here. He was actually supposed to join us for the Facebook Live video today, but his flight came in late or something.
Anyway. Got to the wrong hotel.
Yeah, so sorry he couldn't join us, but
he will be at the screening.
He will be at the screening tonight, 6
yep.
o'clock, at the Beninger Hill Theater. So, Paul, you and I are friends. I know what you've been.
Yeah.
I know what you've been doing for the past 50 years. You've been making Academy Award-winning films.
Thank you,
Paul Karen. What have you been doing for the past 50 years?
I've been in the mortgage business. I have my own mortgage company in Louisville, and I've been in and out of some other endeavors. Actually, I wrote a curriculum about America's, I believe that America is in a customer service disaster. I wrote a book about it, and I wrote a curriculum for overcoming and just basically teaching customer service. It's now a course at the University of Louisville. Paul Wagner got an F in the course.
Proudly so.
And I'm still in the mortgage business.
Do you get to retake it?
No, he wouldn't allow me.
He's barred off. Barred from the class.
So
he's been remarkable to work with. I love this guy. He's such a talented man.
Likewise.
So, you say you didn't know each other back in your Louisville days. How did you meet?
Through a mutual friend who put us together.
I was a football player. I'm not going to know an SAE.
So We put the partnership together. Paul really served as executive producer. He's in the film also because so much of the story revolves around his relationship with the African-American athletes. And I'm totally behind the camera, shot and directed it and wrote it and narrated it, which was a new thing for me.
He was terrific, and we had a very recognizable celebrity was going to do it and then backed out at the last minute, and then he did it.
So the film Black and Blue screens tonight at 6. If you should all go see it, but if you miss it, how can people follow information about this film and where it's going to be available in the future?
Yeah. Well, it'll be out. This is the first screening, first public screening. This is the premiere of the film, really.
Right.
It'll be shown in Kentucky, premiered in February for Black History Month at the university, and then it'll be in release after that, available through Amazon and iTunes and other outlets.
And people can find out information by going to your website.
Okay, always go to our website,
which is
PaulWagnerFilms.com.
PaulWagnerFilms.com.
What is that? Watch the trailer at blackinblue.org.
That's right.
Org.
Yeah, Black in Blue, that's a good idea, Paul. Blackinblue.org has a link to the trailer.
Excellent. And you can also see the trailer on the Virginia
Film Festival.
Film Black in Blue screens tonight at 6 p.m. at Vinegar Hill Theater. I've been sitting with Paul Wagner, Paul Karam. Thank you for joining us on Facebook Live. If you've come in late, you can find this Facebook Live video and other podcasts I'll be doing at virginiafilmfestival.org/podcast. And the audio of all these podcasts will also be on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at stevillepodcast.com. This is Sean McCord. Thank you very much for being here. Paul, thank you.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Sean.